argue with any person on the left. You can see what not having confidence in your evidence and not having conviction in your arguments looks like, right?
It deteriorates into ad hominems, yeah.
it deteriorates very, very quickly into some very sloppy poo throwing. Almost literally. Like, we are almost there, literally. 5 years ago, I was saying poo throwing as just a metaphor for any kind of shitty debate. But now, you know, Lauren Southern from
Red Bull Media,
they poured a piss on her. People being spit at by the social justice warrior types. So the poo throwing, watch out for it, folks. Poo coming at you in 2017.
Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Hey, everybody. Brett here. Welcome back to the show. Today is July 11th. Happy birthday to my dad. So what you're going to hear today is an interview that I did for Liberty Under Attack Radio. This show was a couple of weeks ago, back at the end of June. It started on a Thursday night at 8 p.m. It ran an hour and a half. You're going to hear an edited version of it today. As soon as it was over, I jumped in my car, which was already packed, and I drove to Porkfest and recorded for, I don't know, about 9 more hours before I went to bed. So if you listen to the Dawn of Freedom conclusion a couple episodes ago, this was me 12 hours before that. Totally different frame of mind. So this is a supplemental show, but I think a lot of you are going to say, hot dog, Bert, thanks for posting that. I really enjoyed it. And I wanted to get right to the show and put like a very special announcement at the end of the show, after you've heard the show and you've liked the show. But I'm so convinced that you're going to like this conversation that I had with Shane from Liberty Under Attack Radio and his co-host Jason. I'm going to put the message at the beginning of the show. And if you do listen and you don't enjoy yourself, send me an email and I will mail you a School Sucks sticker. That's a sticker guaranteed. So this whole discussion ran an hour and a half. I'm going to play for you an edited version today. And I'll just put the little click beep sound effect that I use to show you where the edit points are. Actually, are you bored with that? Are you bored with this this click beep thing? Because I did make a few new cut or transition sound effects. For example, we could use this one instead. Folks, here's the key to a good sound effect. Don't expect others to do the work for you. So I say I want the sound of a karate man, clearly like chopping a piece of wood. But those are two different effects blended into one. Am I going to find exactly what I'm looking for if I just want karate man wood chop? No. So I use this little soundboard called Audio Blocks. I find karate man, and then wood chop is a separate search. See how that works? Here, I made a couple others. There's this one. Hi-ya! And I'm also fairly fond of this one. So long story short, we have other transition effects available if you get bored with click beep. So anyway, in the last show, the show with Thaddeus, I talked about our new Patreon campaign. I am excited to announce we are 3% of the way to our goal of 100 patrons. So you can find the Patreon link in the show notes today. It's also on the website in the support menu. But like I said before, that is a way to incentivize the creation of what I think is high value content. And think of it as a way to sponsor that young, frustrated high school or college student who can't afford to support this show. You make this content possible for them. So go to Patreon and sign up to contribute $1 per content item. And some of you are saying, Brett, that's going to cost me a fortune. Well, here's the thing. Like, today's show is a repost. So I'm not going to put that on Patreon and ask people to pay for this. But when I turn out what I think is a really great podcast or video product, I am going to put it there if I think it's worth your dollar. So trust me, I know at this point in my career what is worth a dollar, podcast-wise, video-wise, okay? But I have one other thing that I want to talk to you about today, and this is a big deal. While we're talking about ways to support the show, I have one that's even easier. And this one perhaps is even more rewarding for you because you get stuff mailed to you when you do this. And it is to shop with us through Amazon.com. In the show notes for every episode of School Sucks Podcast, there is an Amazon link. All you have to do is bookmark it and enter Amazon through that link. But I've told you this before. Why am I really stressing this today? Well, I found out that tomorrow, July the 12th, Tuesday, is Amazon Prime Day. This from Amazon.com. Prime Day 2016 is the biggest Amazon event ever, with over 100,000 deals exclusively for Prime members worldwide. And you might be saying, well, I'm not a Prime member. Hold on. On Tuesday, July 12th, the second annual Prime Day will be the biggest global Amazon event ever, with deals starting as often as every 5 minutes throughout the day. Not a Prime member? Try Prime today and enjoy fast, free shipping, exclusive access to movies, TV shows, and music. You love all three of those things. And don't forget about books. And see, the reason why I'm stressing this is because you know you need things from Amazon too. I was searching Amazon today and I found a couple items that I wanted to tell you about. Okay, the first one is called Lobster Mascot Costume. Price, $1,245. And you're saying, I'm sold. Say no more, Brad. Well, plus $50 shipping. And I think that's the thing that people balk at. But if you're a Prime member, suddenly that's free. Listen to this description. Clap your claws together for this friendly lobster mascot costume in bright lobster red. Lobster mascot costume has big lobster claws and extra legs, oversized feet, and a friendly smile on his face. The head is constructed from molded foam and latex for superior detail and durability. Includes a screened vision panel, comfort ventilation panels, and a built-in cooling fan. Well, holy f**k. If you're between 5'4" and 6'2", this is the $1,200 lobster costume for you. I added that part, that rhyme. Suggested use. You've heard of furry conventions. Those things where people dress up like animals and they go and they have sex with each other. You know you've been curious about this. Okay, but the costumes that people wear to those conventions, they have flaps in the front and the back. That's a little threatening, isn't it? You want to check it out, but you're still not sure, right? Lobster mascot costume has no front or back flaps. This thing is almost impossible to get into it. So this is a way for you to attend that furry convention that you've always been curious about without a real need to make a commitment. No one's getting into this thing. Item number two, Happy Deals, giant inflatable pickle, 36 inches. You could ride this pickle down a river, folks. Now, this thing is only $6.22 plus free shipping on orders over $49 from the seller for you non-Prime members. But here's the thing. Go down to Frequently Bought Together, and you can see a great deal here for $30, which still isn't going to help you with shipping. But when I tell you about this, it's going to be hard to resist. Frequently Bought Together, inflatable pickle plus inflatable banana plus inflatable pretzel. Add all three items to your cart for $30.17. Suggested use, I already mentioned it, tubing. You've been tubing on a river. How hard is it to stay in what is basically a giant inflatable donut? Add a new challenge to your tubing adventure. Can you stay on top of giant inflatable pickle? I'll link all these items in the show notes. And finally, a third thing that I wanted you to know about, Wall Monkeys Asian Old Man Peel and Stick Wall Decals. 24 inches high, 18 inches wide, Asian man sticker that you can put on your wall. You should see this thing. He's an older man. He's wearing some glasses and a button-up shirt that's tucked in, and his pants are pulled just a little bit above his waist. He looks friendly, but stern. Suggested use, do you have problems motivating yourself? Or are you a procrastinator? Do you frequently find yourself wandering away from the task at hand? Well, I say, take Asian old man peel and stick wall decal, put it on the wall next to your desk, and pretend he's your dad watching over you, and he will not tolerate failure. You will not disgrace his family. So it's like a new version of one of those motivational posters that you always used to see in the office. $27.98 plus free shipping, no strings attached. And one more note, and I know you're like, my goodness, how long is he going to stay on this Amazon thing? Long enough for you to bookmark that link, folks. I know what I'm doing here. What I'm really hoping to find is somebody who can be like my Amazon affiliate link, Gordon Gekko. And maybe you're out there. Let me describe a little bit what I'm looking for. Say you work for, I don't know, Halliburton. And you're in the purchasing department, what they call procurement. So your boss comes to you one day and he says, hey, Steve, in this example, your name is Steve. We are sending semi-trucks to Iraq, and I need you to go ahead and order 750 18-wheeler truck tires that will fit on the Dongfeng and Hawa truck models. I suggest that you purchase the Luxan 315 80R 22 5s, 255 millimeter 23-inch radials, and get 750 of them. They are $200 a piece. If you are this Steve who works for Halliburton making this purchase order, do you know what that means for me as far as my little payment from Amazon at the end of the month is concerned? I could take the rest of the year off, but I won't. So something to think about. Bookmark that link. Shop Amazon with us. Help out the show. Get cool stuff mailed to you, and everybody's happy. All right, so this radio show that I was on, Liberty Under Attack, really impressed with this young man. His name is Shane Radliff. One of the reasons why I wanted to share the conversation with you, Shane's 24. He's a college student at Illinois State University. He's a communications major. That's what I majored in college. And he is woke, son. And he had me on the show to address these concerns that he had about people in his life. One person in particular who was going through the process of being schooled to become a public school teacher, the kinds of people that I used to train in Massachusetts. And he wants to talk this person out of that. And just like, how do we talk to people about school in a constructive way more generally? That's going to be the latter portion of our conversation today. Like I said, this is two clips. I'll put a full video of this on schoolsucksproject.com as well. I cut out a lot of stuff that I thought a lot of you would be familiar with, the Prussian school system, etc. So, all right, more stuff coming very soon. Lots of outlines being written over in this office, I will tell you. So stay tuned, because I'm going to be turning them into podcasts soon. All right, everybody, thanks for listening, and take care. Thomas says, stay home, get away from me, saying I was bad for you.
So tell us about the School Sucks Project. What are you guys doing over there?
Well, one of the things that I'm really hoping to do with my work is redefine education, or at least give it the proper definition. And I think, you know, throughout my life as a student and really as a teacher, it hasn't had the proper definition. When people hear the word education, they think of public schooling or college, and vice versa. They equate those institutions with education. But, you know, if we look at America's public schools, I don't see how anyone can argue that they are successful in educating, you know, even by their own metrics. Like, the test scores have been flat for four decades. And during that time, spending per pupil has almost tripled. Then if we move on, I would say worse yet, if we move on to higher education, to our colleges and universities, we see just in the last year and a half, people at Yale University, a college that has produced presidents, we see students there crying over Halloween costumes. We see students in other schools demanding protection from free speech. We see them shutting down controversial events with people like Steven Crowder and Milo Yiannopoulos. And I think it's painfully obvious that there is a large amount of adults that are really ill-prepared to thrive in the real world. And these people, especially the people who make it to places like Yale or Rutgers or any of the places where these dust-ups have happened recently, they probably did pretty well in high school, grades-wise, but really, really not equipped to handle the intellectual challenges that are out there beyond K through 12 school. And worse yet, take a look at the predicament voting-age adults have gotten us into with the presidential election this year. You know, mm-hmm. A choice between what's shaping up to be Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And, you know, I don't want to get too into that, but not a lot of evidence of critical thinking going on in that whole process. So the idea that school is synonymous with education, and that's public schooling and higher education, colleges and universities, the idea that those institutions are synonymous with truly being educated should be, when we look at all of that evidence, and we could go into way more, should be pretty easy to defeat, if you ask me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree. And yeah, I went through the rigmarole of public schooling K-12. Actually, I dropped out like 6 months before I graduated and got my GED. But yeah, I mean, I went through that, and I've noticed that, especially, I mean, I started the website probably 2.5 or 3 years ago, but at that time it was for conspiracies, because that's what got me to where I am today. But yeah, so it's kind of focused on that. I didn't do anything with it. It was just a place where I'd go, like, I don't know, very inconsistent, like once every couple of months, I'd go put up something. I'd get the motivation to do so. And I just shared around, get like 5 views, and oh, cool, someone read it. And that was kind of what I did. And then, but yeah, once I started, I guess even in my conspiratorial days, I noticed that there was a lot of, I spent most of my time not actually, I guess, educating myself like I wanted to do, but I was spending most of my time debunking all of the stuff that I learned in high school, and that only can, I guess, luckily I am where I am now, where I listen to podcasts like yours, and I read Rothbard and Mises, and look into philosophy and such. So now it's at Higher Level Indoctrination. I actually have a series, Adventures in Illinois Higher Education, put out the anthology in December with, I think it's like 100 pages or something. But yeah, I've been documenting my experiences there, and it's very, very scary, Brett. It's very, very scary. I mean, at the community college I went to, I called her the sociologist justice warrior teacher. Yeah, she openly advocated for communism and praised Karl Marx.
And, using the word communism, using said we should have, yes, communism.
Yes. Yes, and then she gave this this elementary definition of communism to a bunch of college students. It was essentially like, okay, so imagine you have this pie, children. If there were 12 of us, we would each get an equal slice of the pie. Now, doesn't that sound great? And I was like, you got to be kidding me. Like, I cannot believe I'm seeing this. But yeah, community college was a lot worse in regards to just the blatant advocacy for these dangerous ideologies.
I bet that kind of environment attracts a lot of these nitwit professors, or whatever they are. You don't need to have a doctorate to teach in community college. But I think there's a lot of people, and this is true even in, you know, regular colleges. Like, I saw this at Plymouth State University in New Hampshire like 4 years ago. A bunch of us went up there to do a gun rally. It seems like the teachers gravitate to these places. And there's almost like, I don't know if it's subconscious or if they really, really know this, that the students who are being pumped out of the public schools, especially the ones that wind up in community college, are the perfect targets for their bullshit. And I think that, like, on a subtle level, they have to know that that's what they're promoting, but it makes them feel good. And, you know, all of that ideology, that Sesame Street philosophy that these people have, like, wouldn't it be great if everyone was the same and everybody got the same thing and, you know, was treated the same? Just like things that are unrealistic, but are the mm-hmm. highest values, you know, for these people. They, and, you know, I'm backtracking, because that even flies at the best universities, at Harvard, at Yale. Maybe people can't come out and be openly communist, but certainly they can, you know, perpetuate a lot of the progressivism that has been problematic in higher education for a century now, and it's bled big time into the rest of the world. So, yeah, that's always shocking, never surprising. What did you do? What did you say when this happened? Anything?
Not in the sociology class. No, I tried, and obviously they don't like the teachers there don't like it when you challenge them. So in the couple times I tried, where it was in the American government politics class. And I took the position of a constitutionalist, like just an originalist constitutionalist interpretation. So like that wasn't what I actually believed, but it was the Obergefell versus Hodges decision, the gay marriage, the gay marriage ruling that's legalized it in the United States.
Yeah.
And I challenged my professor, like, well, don't you think it's kind of strange, sir, that latter amendment can usurp a former? So it was a 14th violating the 10th. And he was like, well, that's one interpretation. And he just kind of ignored what I said. And I tried that a couple of times, and it just got shut down. And I know that I'm pretty sure it would have been similar in the sociology class. But I don't go in there with the intention of, like, sparking up a debate. If I get the chance, I will. But more so, I'm trying to, I guess, whistleblow about what's going on inside those institutions.
Like, maintain access. You don't want to blow your cover?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, interesting. Because I'm thinking, like, I would go in there with a soundboard that played, like, wrong answer buzzers and sounds of people throwing up. But I get it. Okay, now I understand what your game is. I like this.
Yeah. So that was, although I still got found out near the end, one of my professors found the website and was not very fond of what I said about him, although I didn't use him by name because I care about privacy. But it's kind of interesting. I thought it would progressively get worse at the university at Illinois State where I go now. But it's actually been a lot more mild and a lot more subtle. I've had less things to write about, but essentially I'm a communications major. So pretty much, like I would say, 95% of the communication theories we're learning about are Marxist communication theories. So I actually did unassigned homework and actually went home and studied these a little more and wrote an article about it. But so yeah, it's a lot more subtle, I guess, except for the mindless millennials. They're a lot more vocal at the campus, at the university campus, and they were at the community college. So that's been scary. And I want to go out and interview some of those folks, but I'm kind of fearful if I go out there by myself. I'm sure you've seen some of the videos of the lunacy that these the craziness that they'll propagate in some of these interviews.
Yep, absolutely. And you know, I'm seeing this problem. And just back to, you asked what we do with the School Sucks Project. Sooner or later, I've got the feeling that I'm going to have to stir up some shit. And I'm going to the Porcupine Freedom Festival tomorrow, and I'm hoping to have a few conversations with some of the guys from Students for Liberty. I don't know if you have a Students for Liberty organization where you are or at your school. But they're all over the country, and I went, this was, 6 years ago, I might have had like 30 podcasts under my belt at that time, and I got invited to UConn, which is a huge school, and a bunch of lefties came in to my speech, and it turned into a very, very lively Q&A. It was civil, you know, I wasn't shouted down, but a lot of hands with questions were going up. And there was a lot of confusion over the philosophy of liberty that I was trying to discuss. But I'd like to go back and see if I could start, you know, meeting with Students for Liberty chapters at different campuses. I'm thinking like this is a project for next year and putting on workshops. But I, one way or the other, and the workshops would be like how to engage the left wing element, the progressive element on your campus. I'm getting careful, being increasingly careful about not using the word liberal when we see how illiberal a lot of these groups are and their attitudes are. Yes. So the left, the progressives, even the regressives, really. This year for us has been kind of a rebuilding year. You know, we talk about school sucking, and we certainly have talked about why it sucks and what the problems are and some of the nefarious characters that benefit from the school system as it is, and that's both K-12 and higher education. But I want people to come to my website and understand what real self-education is and to see the tools for obtaining a self-education. So whether we're talking about home educating parents, frustrated high school and college students, like probably you were, you know, when you were in high school, or really, you know, any adult who's interested in teaching his or herself and enriching his or her life. So I want people to come and see a rich collection of resources that they can use to achieve self-knowledge, to understand how to be a self-teacher, and gain tools and strategies for self-improvement. So I want to provide an answer to the problem that is compulsory schooling and academia. And I'm hoping that in the next few years, we can really, really grow into a larger collection of people, you know, providing courses and doing audio and video lectures and you know, really getting this word out there that school and education are not the same thing. Being very clear about what the problems with school and college are and, you know, being very helpful with people who really do desire an opportunity to teach themselves.
And that's definitely fantastic to hear, because even though, I mean, we did a he's the Liberty Under Attack creative consultant. We gave him a nice cool sounding title. Mm-hmm. He was actually homeschooled, and we had him on back in August of last year to talk about homeschooling. I wasn't aware of how many, like, the endless possibilities for curriculums and styles of homeschooling. So I think it's really, really good what you're doing. Make all this stuff available in one place, essentially, and let people know that these resources are available. Because I can't even imagine. Obviously, I don't have a girlfriend. I don't have kids, thankfully. I could imagine how stressful it might be. Like if a parent is like trying to decide whether they need to pull their child out of public school or not. It's a big decision. It can alter the family's lifestyle, essentially. So it's a major step.
You know, when you talk about you all the variety in this home education or this self-education for young people, or unschooling is what it's commonly called. Well, okay, we know the confines of school, right? The curriculum is what the teachers and the administrators and the district and the federal government creates, right?
Essentially planned, yeah.
The resources are what is bought and put in the school and whatever isn't blocked from the online world. I when I used to tutor, I had kids tell me that, you know, they had a very selective corner of the internet that they were allowed to use for research, and they were told never to go to Wikipedia, and, you know, mm-hmm. they had to pull from these special, like, journal archives that were made for high school students. So, yeah, okay, that's what schooling is. Education is everything that happens outside of that place, right? The whole world. All the people who aren't in the school, all the people who aren't administrators or teachers or on the school board or in the Federal Department of Education, everybody else who's like learned a trade and wants to mentor people or has some, you know, great creative capacity that they love to share with people, every place, every building, every library, every website, that's the world of education, right? We've seen the world of school. It's very, very small and dark and narrow. And education, oh, yeah. Education is the world, you know? Learning, how will children learn without school? Well, learning is living. And, you know, I spent 15,000 hours, 12 years in government school, and then another 6 in college. And I'm not saying there were no times where I didn't feel like I was living in those situations, but most of the time that didn't feel like life. That didn't feel like something that I was enjoying. It felt like I was being restrained, you know, and because of that, I got very bored and I didn't perform well and I didn't feel like I was very smart. And I know because of that, because by their grading system, I didn't do well because I didn't care about anything. I think there's a lot of people who are in that situation. And, you know, I paid the price of thinking for a long time that I just wasn't that bright or capable. So school wasn't for me. And when I started the School Sucks Project in 2009, I had the strong suspicion that there were a lot of other people in that boat. So,
yeah, definitely. Yeah, you made a couple of good points there. But yeah, the database is like for papers that you have to write in college. I mean, at least for where I am at the community college and at Illinois State. Yeah, they have databases that you're forced to select sources from. So that's synonymous with a higher level indoctrination. Mm-hmm. As well. But I wanted to, because you mentioned something interesting there, and this is something that was that I heard throughout high school and then even in college too. They really dislike Wikipedia. I'm not quite sure why. Because apparently the thinking is that anyone can just go in there and change it.
I've absolutely murdered this topic on my show because I used to get so frustrated when kids would tell me that about Wikipedia. I mean, it's not really too much more of a stretch to say that anybody can be a teacher than anybody can edit a Wikipedia page. And it's not even true. You know, if articles are controversial, Wikipedia locks them. If somebody tries to make a change, it goes to at least a handful, if not a couple dozen, volunteer editors for mm-hmm. review. Wikipedia is a great exercise in information literacy. Is this article properly sourced? Is whatever, you know, case it's trying to make about something properly argued? And Wikipedia will even tell you if there's a problem with the article. Well, so you can actually use that as a kind of answer key when you go through an article, can say this is improperly sourced, this contains bias, and you can use that as like a training ground for online information literacy. And kids are being robbed of that opportunity in school. Wikipedia is like a great training ground.
Well, I wouldn't use Wikipedia as a source, but some of the stuff they source to is good information.
Well, yeah. So Wikipedia is a kind of map, right, that you can use before you go someplace and you can see the lay of the land. School is like GPS. If halfway through the trip, this thing just quits on you, you're screwed. You're dependent. You know, you didn't get to look at the map. You didn't plan ahead. You just kind of passively go through this process. And this is why, you know, people use Apple Maps and they drive into lakes and stuff like that. Maybe that was just on The Office, but I feel like that happened a couple times in real life. But yeah, it's like going through, if you to learn something through the schooling process is very, very passive. Wikipedia and sites like that, and it doesn't have to be Wikipedia, obviously, give people an opportunity to proactively survey the terrain first, you know, on their own to get a sense of what it's all about. You know, even like some people do really, really great infographics, and there's probably like a website that collects educational infographics, you know, somebody could find and search. But, you know, just Google image search for whatever topic you want to learn. Infographic is a great place to start. It's not going to give you, you know, in-depth knowledge, but at least it gives you that visual, that map that you need to confidently move forward in some kind of exploration.
Now, we already kind of covered this, but I did have one question in regards to the dangers of public schooling. It's a subject that I'm really, really interested in. I've talked to Daryl Becker and Nick Hazen about the subject. But the Trivium Method, I mean, what is government schooling doing to the Trivium Method of education?
You know, a lot of times I'm just concerned that they're not making it explicit enough. I mean, I think that it's such a natural process for the human mind to go through that as we learn, even though it never gets labeled, we are, you know, gathering up the pieces and trying to identify them. We're trying to understand what belongs together, how they work together, how to integrate them, and then make that knowledge useful. Now, obviously, that's a much easier process when we're intrinsically motivated to go through it, right? We're just trying to fight our way through something we don't care about to get a grade or to not get in trouble. But it's interesting. Have you ever heard the term the three R's for reading, writing, and arithmetic? To the careful observer, we'll notice only one of those start with R, right? But yeah. this is like the foundation of what school is supposed to provide. We need school because it provides us with these lessons that equip. And I agree, knowing those things, knowing how to read, knowing how to write, and you know, knowing what used to be called arithmetic used to be reckoning. So that replaces an A with an R, which was like a Victorian term for being able to do calculations in your head. All tremendously useful skills to become a self-teacher. But as John Taylor Gatto pointed out in one of his talks, those skills can be delivered in like 80 contact hours between student and professor. But we're in school for 15,000 hours, right? So there's, you know, oh, pardon me if my math is off here. What? 14,920 hours unaccounted for, pretty much, right?
Yeah.
So I like to think of the three R's, and this is what they originally were. They were reading, and we can think of reading as, you know, very akin to the grammar part of the trivium, right? The gathering up of information. It's not a perfect match, but it's in the ballpark. The second R was reasoning. And this goes back to like the 18th century and an educationalist named Louis P. Benedict. The third R was recitation, to recite. So to read, to reason, and recite. That basically is the trivium, right? But so when I talk about school, like, yeah, our minds are going through this process, but wouldn't we be better served if the school or the teachers, who certainly don't know what the trivium is, I mean, I'm sure you could interview 100 public school teachers, and I'd be surprised if one of them knew the Trivium Method. But the original formulation of reading, reasoning, and recitation, which was the purposes of education and the purposes of formal instruction prior to compulsory schooling in America, that does leave the Trivium pretty intact, does it not?
It definitely sounds like it does. Yeah, without a doubt. And I have tried. I mean, I guess I kind of, I don't know, tacitly tried. But I took a meta-ethics class last semester, and a lot of the ethical things we were touching on, I guess the ways of, well, how do we know the knowledge or whatever, they kind of some of them overlapped with the Trivium Method. And I mentioned that in a couple of the reading essays. I mentioned it probably 2 or 3 times, hoping he would comment on it in class or comment on it whenever I went and had a private meeting with him to talk about libertarianism. But yeah, it never came up. So yeah, I really don't think it's they really know what it is anymore, which is really sad. Because ever since I learned about it, I realized that that's what I've been using already. I just didn't know there's a name for it now, and it allowed me to kind of refine my education process, so to speak.
Well, yeah, and it eliminates a lot of confusion and frustration when you have labeled that process and you can kind of mindfully guide yourself through it. You know, I went and did some work with Richard Grove, stayed with him for several months back in 2013. And, you know, I remember just learning about photography, with, you know, really, really making the Trivium process explicit and how satisfying it was and how something that had frustrated me before and something that I had walked away from before as a result of frustration, as, you know, I think a lot of people do with most of the things they'll encounter in life. And it does, I mean, it does take discipline. The Trivium is not magical, you know, like you do have to have that intrinsic motivation, but just being conscious of the process as I went through something that was a considerable new challenge, really, really made a positive difference. So yeah, I think there is a kind of robbery in, you know, K through 12 school and in college, the learning process. And, you know, I mean, there's ways to kind of reframe the Trivium, but making the learning process explicit and being mindful about, you know, how you learn, those are really, really important things that are not touched on in school.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely true, and that's something I've noticed as well. And I've made this comment to Daryl Becker before. It seems like the Trivium has been turned on its head within high level indoctrination, and probably public school too. But that's what I'm familiar with now.
What do you mean by that? Can you explain what you mean?
Yeah. So like whenever we're in our lectures, they just present the theory to you, like what it means, and they don't provide you with like the background information. They don't provide you with a thorough explanation. Like they don't provide you with all of the information. They provide you with this narrow set of information, and then you're just supposed to accept the theory as fact, even though it's explicitly a theory. So they don't provide you all of the grammar. They don't allow you to come to you. I guess they kind of do allow you to come to your conclusion since it's a theory. But the way they present it is that, like, okay, this is fact. This communication theory is fact. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it relates to the idea that in institutionalized schooling, whether we're talking about high school or college, authority is a prepackaged concept that you're not allowed to open. There's no questions about the function of the student-teacher relationship. You talked about, you know, being in a college and seeing that teachers clearly don't care for that, you know, even subtly. So if that package can't be opened, why is this our relationship where you decide you have the final say on what's right and wrong, even if I win a debate during a lecture, right? Mm-hmm. So if that package can't be opened, and most students, I don't think they even know this, if that package can't be opened, the authority package, then what about all these knowledge packages that they're passing off to you saying, here's knowledge, but don't open it. Here's knowledge, but don't open it. So yeah, I think I get what you're saying.
And welcome back to Go Pander Attack Radio here on the Freedom Phalanx Radio Network. I'm your host, Shane, and with me I have my co-host, Stan, and Stan and Jason. We are joined by our special guest for the evening, Brett Vinot from the School Sucks Project. You can find his work at schoolsucksproject.com. Okay, so before we went to the break, we discussed the Prussian model of schooling, and Brett provided a very good quote and a good discussion to end that segment, which transitions very nicely into what I want to discuss here. So, Brett, I have people in my personal life. I'm not going to call them out here out on air, but I have people in my personal life that are still employed as government educators, and I'm sure some of our listeners do too. From your experience, what are the best ways to communicate those dangers and promote strategic withdrawal?
All right. Well, I think there's a foundation that needs to be in place when you're having these conversations. When somebody is financially dependent on continuing to believe the same thing, I don't know how good of a candidate that is. How much time have you invested with somebody like that, and do you feel like you've made any headway?
Well, with the person I'm referring to, she hasn't taught much. She's done a lot of substitute teaching and stuff, but she's getting her certifications and things now. But I mean, it's not something it's not a requirement. It's not a requirement financially. So that criteria does not apply, thankfully. That would seem to be the biggest barrier.
Right. Well, yeah, it would be. But you're talking about somebody who is in school with a high level of enthusiasm, surrounded by people who are teaching her how to do this, surrounded by students who are also trying to do the same thing. I mean, that sounds like being up against the Galactic Empire to me. You know, that's really tough. And like maybe even talking about other types of teaching, like not working in the government schools or the public schools, as they would refer to them. Any conversations like that?
I guess it was kind of nice. I typically don't have, like, when I'm with my friends and family, I usually don't start these conversations. Typically someone will see something that I posted and ask me a question about it. And I'd much rather have people do that because then they've opened the door for me. So I don't really start the conversations, but I know that all these people see what I post on Facebook and the stuff that we discuss on the show and what I write about, et cetera, et cetera. But it was kind of nice without me even having to have the conversation with this person. They mentioned that they weren't pleased with Common Core and the public schools now. And this person would rather prefer to work in like a private school or like a Christian school or something like that. And that is something I've kind of noticed, especially from, I guess, the conservative wing, is that like anything Obama does is obviously terrible. So now he's getting involved in schools. Therefore, we don't like it. But they don't go back to the Bush days with No Child Left Behind, which didn't actually attempt to actually provide better education. It just, as far as I understand it, just like lowered the criteria so everyone could graduate. I don't know. It seems to be just kind of an anti-Obama thing, which is fine. But I think you've obviously got to strike the root, which is the Department of Education, first off, if we're not talking about the government in general. But yeah, you know, the Department of Education, once they got involved, I think we're like one of the top three countries for schools. For education or for schooling, and now it's bottom 15 or something like that. Not bottom 15, but like below top 15. So it's definitely deteriorated quite a bit.
And Common Core is really just the repackaging of the same thing, or it's the next step in the same agenda of the Department of Education that goes back at least to the 1980s, which is centralization and systematization. So I'd say there's a basic criteria, basic foundation for anyone who you want to have these conversations with. First of all, most important in any kind of persuasive pursuit, knowledge of the needs, the beliefs, and the concerns of the person that you're talking to. And really like a mindfulness and a respect for what those things are at the outset. I think that's key. Following that is, I think, a confidence in the evidence that you have and a kind of conviction in your arguments, right? Because if you don't have that, I mean, argue with any person on the left. You can see what not having confidence in your evidence and not having conviction in your arguments looks like, right?
It deteriorates into ad hominems, yeah.
it deteriorates very, very quickly into some very sloppy poo throwing, right? Almost literally. Like, we are almost there literally. 5 years ago, I was saying poo throwing as just a metaphor for any kind of shitty debate. But now, you know, Lauren Southern from Rebel
Media, she got
pissed
on her, yeah.
they poured a piss on her. We see people being spit at by the social justice warrior types. So the poo throwing is the, watch out for it, folks. Poo coming at you in 2017. I think it's going to happen, right? But you don't have to worry about that. You can always, you know, remain the, you know, the steady ship in the choppy waters if you have confidence in your evidence and conviction in your arguments, right? And that allows you to be more empathetic with the other person, right? To say, okay, this person needs something, this person believes something, this person has concerns or fears that, you know, I mean, you're not like talking down to them. That's not a good setup either. Yeah. But just to be mindful of that, this is a human being too, and they just disagree with me. And on this issue, because I do have this confidence and conviction, it's probably because they haven't been exposed to information that I have been exposed to. So this is a great opportunity, and I really don't want to blow it.
Yeah. So,
by dumping a bottle of piss on them.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Yeah. Obviously.
metaphorically. So, in this specific case, in this type of argument, I would say clarity in definition would be the next really important consideration, and that's the definition of schooling versus education. Schooling, we understand what it is. You know, go back to those cinder block rooms. Go back to that boredom. Go back to that lack of control. Yeah, maybe once in a while you go to ceramics and there's something fun and maybe you make a few friends and maybe you have a great seventh grade social studies teacher. But those things are all anecdotal in an environment that doesn't serve the needs of the individual learner through and through from beginning to end. I remember having some wildly fun times in my K-12 education. I remember having a handful of, you know, really passionate and dedicated teachers. But those are anecdotes in the realm of that whole experience, right? Contrary to that is education, a lifelong, intrinsically motivated process chosen and guided by the learner, right? This is how adults learn. They decide they want to know something, and then they set out on an intrinsically motivated path towards a goal. Why can't kids do that? They're doing it up until the time they go to school, You know, I mean, you think about all of the successes a 2 or 3 year old boy or girl has in learning to use their body and master their movements as, well, not master, but improve their movements as they get to age 4 and age 5 and age 6. And during that time, we see all these personal breakthroughs and the capacity for reason. And it's all the product of self-chosen exploration that they get to do. And parents are becoming more restrictive with that, and it's a problem. But it is that adventuring, that exploration, that play that leads to success. And that success leads to confidence. And by the time you're 6, they say, good job, Junior. Now go sit there. Now go sit still.
Yeah.
It's fucked.
Or give him a pill. Put him on medication, you know, like, hey, he's asking too many questions. Do you have anything for that, doc?
Indeed. And that's happening with kids as young and as 6 and 7 years old being prescribed methamphetamines.
Yep.
Because they can't sit still, because they're not following instructions. They're not conforming. Why should they? You know, all of their successes prior to that time in life were based on freedom, and not total freedom, obviously, they're little kids, but being able to, you know, witness personal achievement through play and exploration. Yes, I know school has recess 45 minutes twice a day in elementary school, but especially for a young boy, that kind of process or that kind of restriction at that age is terribly unnatural. And that's true all the way for us guys. That's true up until we're like 14, 15, 16 years old. We're not built to sit still. I don't think girls like it either, you know, but it's definitely bad for young boys and young men. So, all right, am I still only on the third one? That's schooling versus education, clarity and definition. Yeah. The fourth one, and this is kind of key, this has to be a person that you have a pretty meaningful relationship with, and you have to have regular access to their mind. You know, you have to be conversating on a pretty regular basis. So like for my example, my uncle, liberal, I'm sure he's going to vote for Hillary Clinton, would practically fall out of his chair anytime anybody said anything bad about Obama. I hammered him for a decade on libertarian principles. Almost every argument we ever had would end with him completely exasperated, just saying, "Ugh, you're probably right. You're probably right. I don't know. I don't want to talk to you anymore." But then a week later, it was like I never had the conversation at all. You ever see the movie Groundhog Day, where Bill Murray has to keep reliving the same day until he gets it right? That was my conversations with political people. My dad, you know, my dad's 66, 67 years old, is a really bright guy, really inquisitive, but he's, you know, conservative, and he's fairly naive about it. He would say, yeah, the Bushes, they seem like good people, you know, stuff like that. And I have a problem with an assessment of the Bushes that, yeah, they're pretty good people. And he and I would have like pleasant conversations, and he'd ask questions, and we'd make headway. And then like, he'd just blindside me the next time I talked to him, where he'd be like, hey, how about this Mitt Romney? I'm like, no, we've been over this. I thought we made progress. I thought we're on to lesson 4, you know, you're going back to lesson 1. So not having regular access is something that's going to make this very, very difficult, because you're emotionally confronting people, right? They don't want to believe, especially, you know, the person in the situation that you're talking about, Shane, where they're entering this world of teaching. They don't want to believe what you have to say. So they're going to turn up their defenses to not believe it, to rationalize their way out of the information you're trying to share. They can also retreat to the comfort of the college environment. They can go and talk to their teachers like, have you ever heard of this guy, John Taylor Gatto? No, I've never heard of him. So he must not be too important if I've never heard of him and I'm a education professor. So, you know, having regular access, and I'm not just talking about like, you know, they open the front door of their house and you're creepily standing there in the morning. Like it's a meaningful relationship that you have with this person. You know what I mean? That's really important. And then I think another really foundational part of this is the fifth part, they have to be willing. You know, they really have to be willing and open-minded. They have to be on a quest for the truth, not for, as we see all across America's colleges and universities with both the students and the professors today, searching for the sayings or the pseudo-facts that make them comfortable and happy. They have to want the truth, even if the truth is upsetting. They have to have a commitment to the best evidence. And if they don't have it and they show you that, you know, a handful of times, I'm eating my words here because I've definitely done this after people have showed me they don't have a willingness and they don't care about evidence. I've persisted beyond that point. But to minimize your own frustration, if the willingness isn't there, I wouldn't persist with that person.
Yeah, and those are all very, very good points. And unfortunately, I see this person, I don't know, maybe 10 times a year, they live in a different state. So it makes things, that makes this. So yeah, that it kind of makes sense. I'm working on this other person too. He's about finished the most dangerous superstition, so I'm working. But yeah, that is the problem. Like when I see him, like for the other person, when I talk to him, like I've had many discussions on anarchism with him, and it's like, okay, we've gotten to this point. Like, okay, so like this is where. Where you're not you don't agree with me. Okay, that's fine. Well, let me go back and I'll do some research on that. We'll come back. But when I get back there, it goes back to the same, like the starting point, just where we were before. So I can definitely definitely sympathize with what you're saying, because that's kind of that's kind of my experience as well.
I mean, like a lot of the stuff that we spend time talking about, most people, like the creep of the bad. You know, whether it comes to whether it's government or Keynesian economics or the public schools, the creep is so slow into the worse that most people really don't understand why they need to pay attention to it. And maybe some people don't. Maybe just a handful of us, like talking about these things and having these websites and generating interest in these topics and generating curiosity about it is enough. As long as other people are like calm and rational and curious. And if we do, you know, like. My girlfriend and I, we don't talk this much about a lot of these topics, but, you know, part of the reason why I'm with her is that she's calm and rational and curious. And if we suddenly had a disagreement over, you know, why a $20 minimum wage is a bad idea, I'm confident that I could explain it to her, you know, and we would reach an understanding.
Yeah, just little tiny battles like that, or not battles, but little tiny, subjects like that. Which is, that's not a small subject, but on little things, you know, you can get people to agree. They're like, okay, well, I see what you're talking about. Then when you try to loop it into the bigger picture, they're like, well, this is too much. You know, I'm biting off more than I can handle here. Does it come from, you know, the 15,000 hours of an indoctrination camp? Are these people having issues with a lot of these subjects because of, you know, essentially the training that they've received in school?
I don't think that's necessarily it. I just think it's the busyness and the challenges of life. I think a lot of people just say to themselves, I thought that was figured out. Like once a year I go and vote. Once a year I send a check or I get a refund check. And that's kind of like my relationship. If I come to a toll booth, I stop and I throw in a quarter. A lot of this is very, very abstract. So to suddenly, if we're talking about the principles of liberty, to suddenly, you know, start pushing this idea that this entire system is built on centuries of philosophical corruption and it needs to be undone and a better world needs to emerge out of the ashes eventually. I mean, I don't like that kind of imagery. I'm hoping this is a gradual process of free market overtaking government functions. I like to think that that's a very warm and fuzzy thought with a lot of the things that I've seen in the last year. I'm confronting the fact that might not be the case, the end mm-hmm. of the state, which is inevitable because it's eating itself and it's destroying itself. And it's, you know, saying everybody huddle underneath me while I collapse, you know, through welfare systems and dependency. It might actually be very ugly. And that's a shame. And I think a lot of what we're trying to do is, you know, pull people out of its shadows as it comes down. But for the most part, the average person, I just think, deals with this stuff in the abstract. This is there. This is settled. We live in a democracy. We live in the United States. You know, George Washington is good. He's on the quarter. These kinds of things like, hey, man, like I have kids. I'm trying to buy a house. I'm having problems at work. You know, I have an ear infection. You know, like these kinds of things. They're like, I don't have time for that. That's cute or whatever, that you have time to think and talk about these things with your friends. But the demands of everyday life are too much for me to give any attention to that. So I will watch CNN for 1 hour a day and I will basically let them, you know, download whatever belief system they're putting into my head. Or maybe it's Fox News. And there's certainly emotional and historical reasons why people would choose one over the other. But there's a safety in all that. And people don't want to wander into this abyss, this philosophical abyss. with us. And a lot of people aren't very good at making this message incredibly palatable, you know, and it's not a philosophical abyss. This is like the only thing that ever made sense to me. You know, I spent time as a Democrat. I spent time as a conservative. And then once I understood these principles, like really understood them, and I don't know why I was receptive when it happened, but I was. And I had the right teachers, you know, Wes Bertrand from Complete Liberty, Stefan Molyneux from Free Domain Radio, the guys from Free Talk Live. And my mind changed, you know, it was the right time for me. I was curious. I was, I guess, you know, always kind of anti-authoritarian, but whatever, it worked. And I was always, you know, I had an interest in these things like politics and history. If people don't, they're probably not going to go for it. This is like an extra headache. So the touch that we use as we, you know, approach the people we care about and try to persuade them, it requires a lot of tact, I think. Tact, yeah, touch, that's redundant, but you get my point.
Definitely, definitely. I had 2 points there. First off, I mean, obviously, yeah, you're mentioning some people don't have the right tact to deliver this message. But yeah, I mean, just as like if I'm trying to sell a service or a good to somebody, I mean, obviously, you've got to be a good salesman. And I mean, yeah, we I'll use a collective pronoun here. We are salesmen. We're trying to sell this idea, sell this idea, these ideas, this philosophy. And it's definitely, and going back to, I mean, with salesmen, like if you don't get them to purchase when you're with them at the time and you give them a card and they go home with it to purchase, they're probably not going to do it. You've got to get them. You've essentially got to get them while you're in person. And that's why I like what Cal Mulaney is doing out there in Richmond, Virginia with Liberate RVA so much. It's because he's having these conversations with people on the streets, these what I would derisively call mindless millennials, but thankfully some of them have joined his organization to abolish the state. But yeah, it's pretty much got to happen like on that for like it just makes sense. Like, oh wow, I didn't know about this. It's got to be more like that, I would say. And you are correct. I mean, I'm not pessimistic by any measure, by any stretch of the imagination, but I do understand the battle that we are in. It's been a battle that's been fought since the beginning of humanity. So I mean, I would love to see the state abolished in my lifetime, but I'm not going to hedge my bets on it. Rather, that's the point of this series, the Direct Action series, is rather than subjugating yourself before the state with voting and running for office and all of those things that have never proven to be efficacious. Create the freedom that we want in our lives right now. Right now. For those who are just joining us for the first time, the Freedom Umbrella of Direct Action, tinyurl.com/freedomumbrella, to over 100 economic means solutions. You can go to that list and you can pick one or two things off there. You can try them out. If one of them isn't working, always go back to the directory. So that's my little rant. Any of you guys, if you have any comments?
I just want to say that I really appreciate that you're doing that. I think that that's a really great approach. And I know we're just about out of time, so I want to make sure I get an opportunity to say thanks for having me on. And I really enjoyed the conversation. Please, if you want to have me on again, find a less dorky picture of me. Look at that guy behind you. Nice. I don't know where you found that. Let me know if you need
Google
me to
images.
Send you one. Oh, gosh. I better call Google. Get that
yeah.
off there.
Get that removed. Yeah, right. I definitely will. And yeah, we definitely plan on having you again. It was a great discussion. I'm sure there's a number of other topics we could go into that would be great material for our listeners. So Brett, any closing thoughts on the subject of government indoctrination or just trying to deliver this message to people effectively?
Yeah, I think being mindful about the communication strategies that you use, I'm sure people can go back and reference the Direct Action show that you did with Daryl Becker. Daryl is great on this topic. And, you know, really having these conversations with people that you care about, not having these arguments in bars, and showing the people during the conversation that you do care about them, that there is great opportunity and satisfaction in this world and in this philosophy, and you want to share it. But one of the best ways to share it is to model it. You know, to kind of have what other people want. And that's something that I really strive for. It's definitely something that I'm still working on. You know, can I have freedom in my 9-to-5? Can I have freedom in my health? Can I have freedom financially? Can I have freedom in my relationships? And what kind of life does that create for me? I think that's really important. And I want to be able to show that happiness that philosophy produced to other people. And I'm a work in progress, like everybody is, but I've made a lot of progress. And that's, you know, one of the reasons, and that's one of the things that I try to demonstrate on School Sucks.
No, I definitely agree. Live by example. When people see your happiness increase, your own personal freedom through financial independence or whatever it may be, people will ask you, what are you doing? Because I want that sort of life. So I definitely agree. Living by example is definitely a great way to start conversation. So we are coming to this final break. Brett, thank you so much for joining us. It was a great discussion, and I'm looking forward to the next time we have you on, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much, and have a great time.